This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
A lot going on around the Umpqua Valley and nationwide. And we go live to Washington, D.C., 2nd District Congressman Cliff Bentz. Congressman, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Great to be joining you, Kyle.
Well, I wanted to jump right at the beginning because it's sort of an evolving situation. I know overnight, when I came in early this morning, the Senate had voted on the ICE package. Talk about that. My understanding is that it's headed to the House. I don't know if we're talking today or if we're talking up the road a bit.
Well, it is headed to the House. They engaged what they call a votorama in the Senate, which is the process they have to use to move a reconciliation bill out. And this particular bill had to be passed using the reconciliation methodology because no Democrat is going to vote for it. So that meant since we only have 53 Republicans in the Senate, that takes 60 to do most things, we had to use reconciliation, which only takes 51 votes. And so they passed it out after going through all of the votes that you have to do, plus amendments that were motions were made and defeated. But the bill was passed out of the Senate. It is now over here in the House. And by the way, there are always procedures that may or may not allow the bill to come out of the Senate, even though passed across the floor. But as far as I know, it did make its way over here to the House. And there was no guarantee that they would get it done. So we were told there would be no votes today, even though, as I understand it, they got that bill done early this morning. We will very probably take it up, I'm going to guess, on Tuesday. And the reason for that is Monday is a fly-in day. And exactly when everybody will be here would be a question, but we're not going to get any Democrat help again in the House, and thus we will need all of us, all of we Republicans, because we only have about two more Republicans than Democrats, and we need just everybody here. So I'm going to guess it won't be Monday night. I'm going to guess it'll be Tuesday.
Well, let's run through a number of topics here. You obviously heard the forecast. We've already got a small fire today down here in the area, just about 15 acres that is being dealt with by the Douglas Forest Protective Association and the Oregon Department of Forestry out by Winston. As we are now into fire season in the area, a lot of concern about that, especially with the drought situation, with the forecast for above normal temperatures throughout the summer in western Oregon and eastern Oregon as well, and really a wide swath of the entire region. With the Forest Service, with the other folks, when it comes to funding, are we ready to deal with this summer?
Well, a great question, and there is no doubt the level of danger is only going to grow worse. I mean, with 100-degree temperatures already in your area next week, it just illustrates the incredible risk that we are now facing as a result of the incredibly horrid condition of our forests. And when I say that, I mean there's way too much wood in our forests. And this is a result of abysmal forest policy over the past 50 years at least. And as a result, we've had this massive buildup of wood, and that's just waiting for a lightning strike or something to start fires. And they're incredibly difficult to put out with so much wood in our forests. And so to that end, I ask Tom Schultz, the chief of the U.S. National Forest Service, yesterday in committee, if he felt comfortable with the amount of manpower he had available to fight fires. He assured me that they had added 5%, somewhere around 5%, more fire fighting folk to their ranks of firefighters, and that he was comfortable. I asked him several times this exact question to make sure that I knew for sure that he felt comfortable, and he does. I said, Chief Schultz, if you change your mind or if you need help, for goodness sakes, come and ask us so that we can take whatever emergency steps might be necessary to address what I view as one of the most dangerous fire seasons we've encountered in years. I did ask the same question of the BLM some months ago when I met with Catherine McGregor. She is, one of the assistant secretaries on the BLM side of things, on the interior side of things, and she told me that they also felt comfortable with what they had at the BLM level. So I've done my job in asking the people that should know if they needed more help. They've indicated they don't. They feel comfortable, and that's about as much as I can do at this point.
And of course, with the fire season kind of varying around the country, we already sent some firefighters a few weeks back to some fires back east where things tend to ramp up sooner. They've got all these mutual aid agreements and all these things in place to pull firefighters from other parts of the U.S., sometimes even beyond, to help with situations here. And that aspect of it seems to be something that is pretty well structured. Obviously, it takes a while to get people from point A to B, something that the fire agencies seem to do very well at.
Well, they certainly, sadly, have had enough experience. Where we have fallen down, and I'm going to have to blame people across the aisle for this, and by that I mean Democratic administrations, for failing to support we Republicans in trying to modify the Endangered Species Act to stop some of the litigation that prevents us from getting into the woods and removing some of this buildup of wood that creates such powerful, horrific, terrible, dangerous fires. And I even asked that question of Chief Schultz. I've said, hey, tell us, what is it? What type of lawsuits are being filed that are stopping us from getting in the woods and reducing the fire danger by taking some of the wood out? And he admitted that indeed it was these lawsuits being filed by our environmental organizations preventing us from removing timber. We know there are going to be fires. It's getting drier, and we need to remove from the woods the type of timber that we don't need there. And I'm not talking clear cutting. I'm talking, let's take away that overgrown timber. There are some places, believe it or not, Kyle, there's 2,000 stems or trees per acre, when every environmentalist would tell you that there should be no more than 80. And so these kinds of overgrown situations need to be addressed and thinned to reduce fire danger.
Let's hit at some other topics as well. One of the aspects for Americans, really any folks from just about anywhere, is the whole issue of data security. We do things like passwords and encryption and all kinds of things, but as a society, as the world moves more and more online, it seems to be a bigger issue. And I know that in the House, you've had Energy and Commerce Committee looking at that subject. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you're exactly right, Kyle. We were just checking. I was checking with my staff this morning how many hours they spend on their cell phones. And the average across the United States is between 6 and 7 hours a day. For younger people, it's closer to 9 to 12 hours a day on their cell phones. And so privacy is extraordinarily important, and security is even more important, because you've got to protect all the data from people who are trying to hijack you and extort money from you to free up your access to data that you absolutely need. Hospitals are a good example. They're many times being held up. We in the Energy and Commerce Committee, I'm happy to be on it, have had any number of hearings on the security type issues. One of the huge problems we have, and I know you know this, but the new AI, artificial intelligence systems that are coming out now, are enabling hackers to invade different systems. And in fact, they stopped some of the new chat GPT the software systems, they're called LLMs, large language model systems that can crash your computers and because they were just too usable by hackers. No, it's a huge problem. We are addressing it as best we can, but I got to tell you, somebody said that we in Congress are kind of like somebody riding a donkey trying to install a seatbelt on a Tesla going by at about 60, 80 miles an hour. And when it comes to fixing artificial intelligence, so it's a huge challenge, and I'm not sure that Congress is up to it, but we're trying.
That's quite a picture there. In rural America, like the 2nd District, healthcare, big issue. You've got places like where you are in the Ontario area, folks that are out not just in Ontario, but areas where they've got to drive an hour and a half just to get healthcare. A lot of options there, a lot of concerns. What's going on with rural health?
Well, a lot. Let me just share that we included in the Big Beautiful Bill $50 billion, that's with a B, $50 billion for rural healthcare transformation. And the concept was that this would be spread over 5 years. Oregon received $197 million just a few months ago as the first tranche of another 4 years of, we hope, similar amounts of money coming for rural healthcare. And we were just advised that about most of my hospitals are each going to receive about $1 million of that amount. And then there's going to be another $80 million made available for grants. So people that are institutions that want to apply for additional funding can do so if they have ideas that will help provide health care for better health care for less money is kind of the way I put it. But we are absolutely working on that. I'm currently trying to put together a Zoom call. I actually started to make arrangements for this this morning. But I've talked to Dr. Oz several times, the head of CMS, and he is willing to talk to my hospitals. We're going to set up a Zoom call and give the opportunity to my hospitals to ask him one question each. I think there's 11 or 13, somewhere between 11 and 13 of hospitals. But we're trying to make sure that the problems that rural hospitals have are front and center here in Washington, D.C. And I'm happy to have Dr. Oz's ear in making sure that happens.
And for a lot of the hospitals, the financial side of things, whether they operate as a profit or nonprofit, has really become an increasing issue. It sounds like a lot, as we've heard recently out of the Portland area, are having some pretty serious issues when it comes to keeping things in the black.
Yeah, and that's even before some of the provisions of the big bill, the big beautiful bill, take effect. So yes, they are definitely having difficulties. Part of the problem is the fraud that you are starting to see being uncovered in different places, billions of dollars being stolen by bad actors who have put together false corporations that are pretending to provide health care, sending bills in, and people haven't been paying attention. They've just been paying them. And this is endemic in California. I think that they've cut off about half of the payments that were going to different corporations or entities, partnerships, LLCs that were busy pretending to be providing health care services. And so thank goodness Dr. Oz is looking at this really hard, because every one of those dollars that they're stealing needs to be going to healthcare, not to fraudulent scam artists that are stealing money. The need is too great to allow people to be defrauding the government in these spaces. And we're also trying our best to find other ways of reducing costs into that, and working on any number of different ideas. It's a never-ending battle. There's $4 trillion, more than that, a year being spent on healthcare. So saying that somebody's going to fix it in a simple way is simply incorrect. But we're working on it literally every day here.
Now, while we're on the topic of healthcare, let's move over to the idea of veterans' healthcare. And a continued ask that I get in the community are our members of Congress really still working on getting a Oregon State Veterans Home on the Roseburg VA campus?
Well, I can assure you that this member of Congress is. And to that end, several months ago, I had a very direct conversation with the head of the Veterans folks that administration that are supposed to be working on this. I asked them why they weren't asking for the. Well, at that point, it was 1.2 or 1.3 billion that was going to be necessary to bring every veteran's home up to speed, including the building of the one in Roseburg. And I asked them, why aren't you asking for this amount of money? And I was told that they weren't. They were waiting for instructions on how much to ask for. And I said, well, let me give you my instructions. We need about 1.3 billion if Roseburg's going to end up with its money, because Roseburg at that point was number 80 on the list. We've moved all the way up to number 79, and at the same time, the total amount of demand has gone from 1.3 billion. To somewhere closer to 1.7 billion. And the demand is for repairing these kinds of homes across the United States and for building several also. So yes, I'm working on it very directly and suggested to the people that should know, let's ask for the entire amount of money and try to get it appropriated so we can end up with the home in Roseburg.
And the longer we wait, of course, the more this project's gonna cost.
And that's true. And I'll just tell you that when we know that we're spending too much money on many, many, many things, and we're going to have to dial it back if we're going to be able to afford the type of things that the veterans absolutely need and deserve. And so we've been working on trying to address these fraud issues in different places to try to figure out how to spend less because people are stealing from us. And at the same time, we're trying to figure out how to find the money to spend more for those who truly deserve it, which, of course, the veterans are front and center.
Let's talk about the farm bill. A lot of agriculture, obviously, in the 2nd District, including in the Umpqua Valley. And my understanding is that when it comes to the farm bill, folks really vary in their opinions on it.
Well, that would certainly be the understatement. That would be the understatement of the conversation. There are lots of varied opinions on the farm bill. The difficulty we have right now is trying to get it through the Senate. And the opinions vary because many people believe that too much is being spent on SNAP or food stamps. Many people believe that too much is being spent on programs that try to balance the risk that farmers take. As they try to stay in business in periods of drought, like we're having now, and the periods of dumping of crops like onions and potatoes into the United States from places further south and other places. And so the Farm Bill is a hugely complex piece of legislation. I'll just say that we did get it across the floor here, and now it's up to the Senate. But there are also hugely challenging pieces of the Farm Bill that have to do with E15, that is different additives made from corn ethanol, and those kinds of things are also guaranteed to raise differences of opinion, nicest way to put it.
Well, and some of those differences of opinion, too, seem to vary whether folks are looking at the whole agricultural picture or is sort of the big ag versus small ag producers.
Well, there's no doubt about that. The challenge across the board is that you're dealing with farmers in all kinds of different situations across the entire United States. And farmers are incredibly important, unbelievably important. They're taken for granted because we have so much food in the United States and we're an exporter for the most part. But these droughts are making it more and more difficult to keep up with the demand. And when people go to the supermarket and pay more for lettuce or for carrots or for vegetables that we know everybody needs, they can't understand why they cost so much. And much of the reason has to do with the challenges on the production side, on the labor side, and then on the cost of fuel side and the cost of fertilizer side. So all of these things conspire to drive these costs up, but they also drive the risk up. So with the farmers paying all of these prices, and then you suddenly have a drought or you suddenly have a market that goes south on you, you better have some safety net. And so this safety net applies basically across the board. But you're right, the bigger farmers end up with more. But it doesn't mean that their loss is any less. It's a challenging situation, and I'm just happy that we've at least taken one step in the right direction of getting the bill passed.
About a minute left with Congressman Cliff Bentz on Inside Douglas County. As you look ahead into the summer, what are some of your priorities with legislation?
So we have a third reconciliation bill opportunity coming along, and that's going to be exciting, and we're hopeful that we can get some of the issues that we've been working on into that particular bill, because as I've mentioned before, on reconciliation, it takes just 51 votes, and in the Senate, there's a much better chance of getting it passed. I've been working on the ONC bill to try to make it absolutely clear that the ONC lands should be maintained for the benefit of the communities that are adjacent to them, and not just to be set aside to burn up. And I've been working with Commissioner Freeman on this for years, and I'm happy to say that at least we have the bill pending, and I'm hopeful for a hearing. So that's something I'm looking forward to. We have any number of bills that have to do with trying to fix the Endangered Species Act, so we are continuing to work on that. We have my wolf bill, although we did pass one, and it's over there in the Senate. We have a lot of things the Senate should be doing that isn't, that they're not, and then the Fix Our Forest Act is sitting over there and has been for 6 or 8 months. So I would encourage listeners to call Senator Wyden-Merkley and say, for goodness sakes, boys, move the Fix Our Forest Act out of the Senate.
All right, out of time for now. We'll talk again hopefully soon. Second District Congressman Cliff Bentz, we appreciate you being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.